Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, July 23rd, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Two former managers at Zuva Petroleum Private Limited, who took company owners to the Supreme Court over the termination of their service, today filed an appeal at the Constitutional Court against last Friday's ruling allowing employers to fire workers.
We have today filed an appeal at the Constitutional Court. We are appealing against the decision of the Supreme Court, and we are asking the Constitutional Court to set it aside.
A Zimbabwean journalist based in South Africa says he's now fearing for his life after reports that he might have information on the whereabouts of missing activist Itai Dzamara, the leader of the Occupy Africa Unity Square.
Before Dzamara went missing, and when we ran the story, Itai Dzamara hiding in Botswana, Mukululi is said to have sent a message to Fidel Tsengu saying that Dzamara would go missing.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton hands over grants worth thousands of dollars to 15 community-based organizations.
And the MDCT faces a $500,000 lawsuit over party regalia used in the 2008 general elections.
These stories and much, much more coming up.
Two former managers at Zuva Petroleum Private Limited, who took company owners to the Supreme Court over the termination of their service, today filed an appeal at the Constitutional Court against last Friday's ruling allowing employers to fire workers. The Supreme Court ruling, which sided with their employers, has triggered a mass firing of employees. Labor groups say more than 1,000 workers have been retrenched since Friday. Don Nyamande and Kingston Donga accused the petroleum company of illegally terminating their contracts after taking over from BP Shell.
Through their lawyer, Love Momaduku, they argued that Section 12.4 of the Labor Act does not grant an employer the right to terminate employment contracts on notice, but simply provides terms and conditions of provisions of notice. But Chief Justice Godfrey Chijau Siku and four other judges sitting at the Supreme Court unanimously agreed that common law position placing employees and employers on an equal footing was still operational. Maduku tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that papers have indeed been filed in the Concord and wants Chijau Siku and four others to recuse themselves.
We have today filed an appeal at the Constitutional Court. We are appealing against the decision of the Supreme Court, and we are asking the Constitutional Court to set it aside, to declare that decision null and void. In other words, we are saying the decision of the Supreme Court was unlawful.
But some people might say, wait a minute, Professor Maduku does not have a legal leg to stand on, since these Supreme Court judges are the same who are going to sit as Constitutional Court judges.
Of course, there is a weakness in the Constitution that you have the judges of the Supreme Court being judges of the Constitutional Court. But what people must know is that the Constitutional Court sits with 9 judges. The judges that decided the matter in the Supreme Court were 5. And all those 5 judges who were part of the bench in the Supreme Court will not be allowed to be part of the bench in the Constitutional Court. So what is going to happen is that some judges from the High Court, 5 of them, will be asked. It will be the first time in the history of the country that you have judges of the High Court being asked to go to the Supreme Court to constitute the bench so that you have full 9 judges. Without those, it will be contrary to any principle of natural justice for the same judge to sit in an appeal. So it won't be allowed.
That was constitutional law expert Love Momaduku, also president of the NCA, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. A Zimbabwean journalist based in South Africa says he is now fearing for his life after reports that he might have information on the whereabouts of missing activist Itai Dzamara, the leader of the Occupy Africa Unity Square. The state-controlled Herald newspaper recently reported that Dzamara was not kidnapped but skipped to South Africa as a way of effecting the so-called regime change agenda in Zimbabwe. Citing police dockets, the Daily reported that businessman Energy Mutodi, who is also a ZANU-PF activist, had told police that journalist Mkululi Chimoyo knew the whereabouts of Dzamara, who was allegedly abducted from Glenview suburb more than 4 months ago.
Chimoyo was last year implicated in the Facebook troll Baba Jukwa saga. He denied knowing the character, who was believed to be someone embedded in the higher echelons of ZANU-PF, judging by the information that the shadowy character revealed about ZANU-PF officials. Mutodi also told police that another ZANU-PF activist, Fidelis Fengu, had information on the whereabouts of Dzamara. But Fengu denied this. We spoke to Mutodi, who, although admitting that he gave police information on Dzamara's alleged whereabouts, says it was passed on to him by Fengu.
Fengu again came with a story to me saying that Dzamara was hiding in Botswana. And I read that story on my Facebook account based on the information that he provided. The same way he provided information about planned Mugabe assassination by Vice President Mujuru and the cabal. How then can he turn to tell you that the story about Dzamara hiding in Botswana is incorrect when he actually provided the same information?
We read in the papers that you also mentioned Mkululi. What do you know about him?
Right. What I can tell you is that before Dzamara went on missing on the 9th of March, and when we ran the story Itai Dzamara hiding in Botswana, Mkululi is said to have sent a message to Fidelis Fengu saying that Dzamara would go missing. Where Mkululi had got that information, nobody knows.
That was businessman and ZANU-PF functionary Energy Mutodi on the line with Studio 7 from Harare. We also reached Mkululi Chimoyo, who says he has received numerous threatening calls since the publication of the story.
That's absolutely nonsense. And what I can say is that at times, it's unfortunately that the world is always talking of e-democracy and other people are taking advantage of e-democracy to abuse other people. I don't remember even on one day hinting anything about Dzamara's disappearance.
So then what do you make of these allegations, considering that you had earlier been accused of being Baba Jukwa, the Facebook character?
At times, if you keep quiet and you continue to keep quiet, people always take advantage of you. You know, what I can say in brief, I'm a victim like Dzamara himself, you understand? I was victimized by the Herald and team, and now they are at it again. Unfortunately, I actually contacted the Herald editor, Caesar Zwai. He actually told me that what they published to the police disposition. Understand, of which I understood what he did, because in line with what was written in that article, they were quoting what they took from the police. But the unfortunate part of it is that the police got something from someone where my name is hinted, and they also had my contact numbers, but they failed contacting me to clarify what was at their hands.
That was Mkululi Chimoyo, a Zimbabwean journalist based in South Africa. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Johannesburg in South Africa.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton today awarded grants worth thousands of dollars to 15 community-based organizations under the Ambassador's Self-Help Project aimed at assisting small-scale and short-term development projects. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera reports.
Ambassador Wharton told journalists in Harare after presenting grants to various community organizations that the objective of the program is to bring tangible and immediate improvements in people's lives.
It helps Americans better understand the challenges and the potential of Zimbabwe, and helps Zimbabweans better understand U.S. policies and programs meant to support the people of this great country.
He said the program, which is part of large-scale initiatives carried out by some organs of the United States government, also helps to bring Americans and Zimbabweans closer. 15 selected beneficiaries were drawn from more than 200 organizations that sought financial assistance from the U.S. Embassy. They include Jesuit Refugee Services from Tongogara Refugee Camp in Chipinge, Chenuta Secondary School in Murewa, Bagu Village Women's Group from Gutu, Domboshava Community Development Association from Ashonaland East, and the Zimbabwe Opportunity Industrialization Centers, Taguta Cooperative from Chibi District of Machuco Province. Jesuit Refugee Service Southern Africa Regional Director Father David Holdcroft said the grant which they received would benefit 50 women and their households.
The refugees cannot generally go outside the camp, and so we're trying to help women. There are very, very limited opportunities to get income. They're very poor, and so we're trying to help women with some income-generating strategies by raising livestock, goats, pigs, chickens.
Another recipient, Councillor Enoch Shindi, said Taguta Cooperative in Chivi would use the grant for alleviating serious water shortages in the district.
We have 89 women using Taguta Garden, and they've been facing difficulties in the event of our dam drying up. Now, when we are given the bore that is going to be pumped using the generator, I think that is going to ease the labor power that was being used by the women.
Murewa District Administrator Maxwell Maburo, who coordinates development activities in the area, said the development projects will go a long way in providing food and nutrition, particularly for people living with HIV and AIDS.
This project is meant for the disadvantaged who are supposed to benefit from this assistance, so that they can take care of their families.
More than $2 million has been distributed under the ambassador's special self-help program in the last 10 years. Grants range from $5,000 to $10,000, with beneficiaries expected to complete their projects within 12 months of signing a grant agreement. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
A case in which MDCT is being sued for non-payment of campaign material produced by a Bulawayo company for the party's 2008 election campaign was today adjourned to tomorrow to allow an MDCT senior member to give his testimony. The court case pitting Kabata Trade and Finance and the MDCT started yesterday and continued today, with the party's lawyer Douglas Monzora concluding his cross-examination of the plaintiff's main witness, Lawrence Zlatner, who is the general manager of Security Mills, company that made the campaign material in question. The company wants the High Court to compel the MDCT to pay about $500,000 for the campaign material that includes T-shirts, bandanas and wraps popularly known as Zambias, which the company says it made and delivered to the party in 2008 after having been approached by MDCT National Executive members Eddie Cross and Simon Spooner. Monzora told Studio 7 that his party is disputing the case because it never gave Cross and Spooner the authority to make the order.
The first thing is that the MDC is a part of rules. It has a constitution, it has a finance and administration rules, which make it very clear on who authorizes payment, who goes and procures goods. And it's in black and white. It is the Secretary General and the Treasurer General and the Finance and Administration Committee. And again, this has not been the case in this particular matter. So we think that this is a distraction on the MDC. It is unfair.
But Richard Fitches, representing Kabat Finance and Trade, said the MDCT should be found liable to pay the money as an order for goods was made and the items were supplied in accordance with the order.
The MDCT approached the plaintiff in the 2008 elections for campaign material. The first batch was manufactured and paid for. The same parties who effected the first order approached for further campaign material during the election rerun. And when donor funding was withdrawn at the same time as the defendant withdrew from the election rerun, excuses were made, but no payment was made.
The Supreme Court referred the matter back to the High Court in 2012 after it ruled against the MDCT's plea that it was not liable to pay the money to Kabat Trade and Finance as the contract had been illegally processed.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
Zimbabweans fume over President Robert Mugabe's endless foreign trips that cost millions of dollars.
I feel it's very unfair for the president to be traveling so much, especially in the case that our economy is not looking so good. You see, when he goes out of the country, he has a large entourage. He's got a lot of people that he travels with.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The European Union has opened an antitrust case against six major US film studios and Sky UK of Britain, charging they unfairly restrict customers' access to content within the European Union.
Amnesty International has released a report saying Burundian authorities repressed the political demonstrations earlier this year as if they were an insurrection, using lethal force to silence anti-government protesters.
American R&B singer Chris Brown has been prevented from leaving the Philippines after being caught up in a dispute over a cancelled concert. The 26-year-old said in a profanity-laced video posted to Instagram that he did not do anything wrong and does not know why he cannot leave.
U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter has made an announcement visit in U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter has made an unannounced visit to Iraq, which is fighting Islamic State militants with the help of U.S.-led airstrikes and training.
Top Obama administration officials today ramped up efforts to sell the Iran nuclear deal to skeptical lawmakers on Capitol Hill.
And FBI Director James Comey says the Islamic State group's online attempts to recruit Americans pose a bigger terror threat to the U.S. than Al-Qaeda.
President Robert Mugabe's frequent foreign trips have infuriated several Zimbabweans, who are now calling on the 91-year-old leader to stay at home and address the country's faltering economy. As our presidential correspondent Thomas Chiripasi reports from the capital, Mr. Mugabe is set to embark on several foreign trips on African Union business.
Since assuming the rotational chairmanship of both the African Union and the Southern African Development Community, President Mugabe has hardly spent a week in Zimbabwe, as he has been traveling to several countries in Africa and beyond to attend to business involving the two continental organizations. But many Zimbabweans, such as Kudzai Gombeza, say Mr. Mugabe should not only address issues affecting Africa, but also focus on problems bedeviling his own country. Gombeza says the president's trips are draining the national fiscus.
I feel it's very unfair for the president to be traveling so much, especially in the case that our economy is not looking so good. You see, when he goes out of the country, he has a large entourage, he's got a lot of people that he travels with. And as far as I know, they say each time he goes out, he's given some money for security reasons, I think, which is unfair because that money can be used for something better, the economy to get better than just traveling.
It is unclear how much Mr. Mugabe spends per trip in travel expenses, personal allowances, and related costs for his entourage, always numbering more than 70, including some top state officials, bodyguards, and family members. Indications are that some of the trips are funded by AU and SADC. Luke Tamborinyoka, spokesman of former Prime Minister and Movement for Democratic Change founding president Morgan Tsvangirai, says the president should prioritize issues affecting Zimbabwe than the entire continent.
It's definitely getting too much. The president is not taking seriously his national responsibility. Considering the magnitude of the national crisis, he ought to sit down, sit back, relax, and consider coming up with proper solutions to the monumental crisis facing the nation.
His views are echoed by Pride Mukono, former president of the Zimbabwe National Students Union, or ZINASU, who says that Mr. Mugabe should pay more attention to the country's economy, which is currently declining fast. The World Bank and other international institutions are projecting that Zimbabwe is likely to record a marginal 1.5% growth this year, a figure that is causing panic in state corridors, following promises by the ruling ZANU-PF party in the run-up to the 2013 general elections that it will provide more than 2 million jobs. Against this background, Mukono says it is difficult to revive the national economy as government business is normally on a standstill when the president visits other nations.
The greatest toll is actually on the national fiscals. That's where the greatest unhealthiness is occurring. Because if you look at it, the president is traveling at his old age across the world, globe-trotting. He comes back, and whenever he has a medical challenge, again, state resources have to be forked out for him to go and seek medication, which is very expensive.
But political analyst Goodson Nguni, who has links with ZANU-PF, says the president does not use local resources when he is traveling on AU and SADC business. However, Mukono insists that Mr. Mugabe should delegate his deputies at the AU and SADC to take care of most issues in order to allow himself to attend to critical matters back home.
The president must actually be able to give others a chance or an opportunity. Commendable that in one of the recent trips, one of the vice presidents to go to China, give other his deputies in the SADC region, the likes of Ian Kama, who is his deputy, go to some of these summits. What he all needs to do is to learn the art of devolving power.
Promise Mukwananzi, director of the Zimbabwe Informal Sector Organization, concurs, noting that the president's frequent foreign trips are affecting the non-agenarian leader's ability to deal with important Zimbabwean issues.
The uncertainty that it creates has serious implications for the country, for investors, for the stability of the country. If you see now, it has become so difficult to engage government because of the fierce internal fighting within ZANU. One minister is going that direction, another is going that direction.
Political analyst Pedzai Ruanya, director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, however, says Mr. Mugabe has no choice given his position at the AU and SADC, as he has to attend to a devastating Boko Haram onslaught in Nigeria, terrorism in Mali, political conflicts in Burundi, South Sudan, and others. He says Mr. Mugabe should use those trips and his position in the two blocs to improve Zimbabwe's relations with the international community.
Our concern should be to remind the president and those who govern this country that when they go to these meetings, they must always make sure that the meetings that the president attends also benefit our country in terms of wooing foreign investors.
Some analysts say Mr. Mugabe is likely to cut his foreign trips when his terms at the helm of AU and SADC come to an end. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
A police in Zimbabwe's eastern border city of Mutare today disrupted a meeting which was supposed to be addressed by former Prime Minister and founding MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai. The party's Manicaland provincial chairperson, Dev Tichimini, told Studio 7 they ended up abandoning a local executive meeting after members of the police internal security and intelligence unit refused to leave Queen's Hall.
They forced themselves into the meeting where they were not supposed to be. And we maintain that the law is very clear. We have lawyers in our party. They advised us accordingly. And it's very clear that the police cannot come to give us the authority to hold the meeting. Neither have they authority to come and interrupt or participate in our meeting. So surprised, because we also asked them what was special about this meeting, because we have had several meetings where they have come and we've told them that they cannot be part and parcel of this meeting. But we were then told by the superintendent, I didn't pick his name, that this is a special meeting in that your party president is in the area. And we are now getting calls, finding out why your party president is coming to a province to address structures. And they answered that I have a right to invite any party leadership to come to my meeting, particularly if it is a planning meeting of the province.
That was MDC's party provincial chairperson in Manicaland, Dev Tichimini. The Zimbabwe Women's Football Chairperson Miriam Swanda, who was suspended by the Zimbabwe Football Association, says women's football in the country will continue to deteriorate due to poor soccer management. Swanda tells Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Uye the disqualification of the Mighty Warriors from a crucial Olympics Games qualifier is one of the signs that all is not well in Zimbabwe's football administration.
The state of Zimbabwe women's football at the moment is confused and painful simply because there are people who want to get themselves involved in the running of the league when they are supposed to be supporting and giving advice. And this is mainly the ZIFA Secretariat. They suspended myself and two other colleagues on trumped up charges, and they failed to bring us before a disciplinary hearing. And in the process, they have gone and set up a parallel league just to bring fusion. And at the end of the day, what you see happening is the painful development we witnessed on Sunday when our girls failed to travel to Ivory Coast to fulfill an Olympics qualifier match.
What were the charges and when was this done?
This was towards the end of April. I was accused of inviting enemies of football to come and watch a match between the Mighty Warriors of Zimbabwe and the Black Queens of Ghana. And these enemies of football included a former chairperson of Zimbabwe Women Football, Susan Chibije, a former PSL chairperson, Chris Sambo. For me, it was inviting people who have a history with football, who have a passion with football. And one of the charges is that I have been writing to the ZIFA president wanting to find out what has happened to FIFA FAB funds earmarked for women.
That was suspended Zimbabwe women's soccer chairperson Miriam Swanda speaking to Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Uye from Harare. There was no official comment from ZIFA.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts of the Women's Forum, Praxedis Jeremiah and Marvelous Mhlanganya Uye, will be talking with listeners and experts about women in sports.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Two former managers at Zuba Petroleum Private Limited, who took company owners to the Supreme Court over the termination of their service, today filed an appeal at the Constitutional Court.
A Zimbabwean journalist based in South Africa says he is now fearing for his life after reports that he might have information on the whereabouts of missing activist Itai Dzamara, the leader of the Occupy Africa Unity Square.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton hands over grants worth thousands of dollars to 15 community-based organizations.
That's our broadcast this evening.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.